When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
And welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from the Alliance for American Manufacturing, it's Scott Paul. Scott, welcome to the show.
Sly, it's great to be with you.
Well, I don't even know where to begin.
I hear you.
They're all the whole DC New York media circuit singing from the. It's like going to mass. They're all singing from the same hymn book.
Yes, they are, and I'm glad you called it that because it is really like a religion to a lot of these folks, and tariffs are the worst sin in this faith tradition. The problem is that they do have a faith in this kind of a philosophy, but when they look around and see what's happened in the United States and see that 10 steel mills have closed since 2000, that our steel industry was in a technical recession for a few years between 2013 and 2016 when the rest of our economy was growing, albeit slowly. You got to think that something is wrong, and I think it's time to push back on these Wall Street types. I saw an analysis where Goldman Sachs said this is terrible, and another firm said this is a quote unquote black day for the world. And I'm like, what happened in 2007 and 2008 when they defrauded investors and tanked our economy and put us into the worst economic situation that we've been since the Great Depression in the 1930s? These tariffs amount to $9 billion in an economy that's almost $20 trillion. But the impacts that they will have in steel and aluminum communities will be profound, and they'll be profoundly positive, and they will help to restore some stability to industries that have been reeling, and they'll help create some paychecks for, and I would add a lot of them are union paychecks and good paychecks, for people who have been laid off, who have an amazing and irreplaceable skill set. And all they want to do is make steel and aluminum. They want to make it for our pipes, for our military, for our construction, for autos. But they've been hampered because our trade policies disadvantage them unbelievably.
Here is one of the worst when it comes to singing the loudest from the hymn book. It's Richard Haass on Morning Joe yesterday.
Donald Trump is talking about recreating a manufacturing base that owes more to like 1957 in the Great Lakes region than what China's doing. It's really frightening.
You're exactly right. We're about a century different from China. They're looking ahead. We're looking back. The president asked the other day, what's a country that doesn't produce steel? Well, that might be a country that's leader in AI or in alternative energy or in robotics, that's training its workers, not for the jobs that will never come back, but it's training the workers so they're able to take the jobs that will come into existence. So China's looking forward, we're looking backwards, and guess who's going to dominate the 21st century if this continues?
Where do you even begin? First of all, I hope Leo Gerard wasn't having breakfast watching that. Can you imagine?
Me neither.
You saw that?
No. He probably got a couple shades more red, I imagine. So here's the challenge with that. And look, I agree. We're not going to have a manufacturing economy that has massive steel mills or auto plants that employ tens of thousands of people. And even proponents of manufacturing like myself acknowledge that. But that doesn't mean we should surrender on these issues. When you know, all of your listeners, when they look around today, they'll find steel and aluminum within 2 or 3 seconds, probably. So we're in a digital age, but steel and aluminum are materials that are all around us and are important. And Richard Haass talks about artificial intelligence. Well, China has an enormous plan to dominate artificial intelligence, and they want to dominate it the same way that they dominated steel. And so the idea that you simply are going to, you know, not help an industry that's been around for 100 years but is still relevant, and you're going to turn to the future, completely ignores the fact that we have a terrible trade policy, that we've been unwilling and unable to stand up to China on any of these issues. And it's, as you know, Sly, it's not just steel. It's also electronics. It will be robotics. It's a lot of other high-tech stuff, and this is this is where you start on all of this, on steel and aluminum, because those markets are the most distorted.
And our modern steel plants are far more technologically advanced than they were 30 years ago.
They sure are. They look a lot different, and there is no question that it takes fewer workers to make even more steel. But what has always made up that difference in kind of the losses from automation is that we've engineered and invented new products. We've grown our market share. We've grown our economy. And we've diversified our steel industry, and that has allowed us to add some jobs. But what's held us back at every point are imports, and the imports, not because these other countries can do it better than the United States. China is a grossly inefficient producer. It adds 3 to 4 times more carbon per ton of steel when it makes it, 20% more particulate matter. And so they're not an efficient producer at all. They're a terribly inefficient producer. But guess what? They're owned by their government, and they're not out to make a profit, and they don't have to keep a balance like that. And they get energy that's next to free, and they don't do labor and environmental standards or anything like that. And if you don't do tariffs for China and for other countries, you're really letting them off the hook, and there are other consequences to that.
Here is I can't believe this, but I grabbed this off the Laura Ingraham show. You know, I was really panning for gold for this show. Here's a clip of some of our previous leaders talking about trade with China.
Bringing China into the WTO is a win-win decision. It will protect our prosperity, and it will promote the right kind of change in China.
And let's be frank. If China emerges as a stronger economic power, but with a more liberalized political system, that will be very, very good for the world.
I believe a country that trades with the rest of the world is a country more likely to embrace freedom.
So, how'd that work out?
Yeah, they were all completely wrong, weren't they? And by the way, Laura Ingraham had me on her radio and her TV show, Sly, and it was okay.
I know.
So
this situation makes strange bedfellows, doesn't it?
It sure does. And I guess to her credit, she's been aware of the challenges that China presents to our economy and to our security. So hat tip to Laura for getting it way more right than Bill Clinton or Obama.
Who were the two leaders fighting against China for PNTR on the human rights basis as well? It was Russ Feingold and Jesse Helms working together.
Right. In the Senate, and they were two of the, as someone who worked against it in the House of Representatives, we had a little coalition, but there was virtually no one in the Senate at all. And you're right, it was Feingold and Helms, and not a lot of others. And so
well,
it is a Yeah, it does make for strange bedfellows. That doesn't mean we're wrong. We're contrarian, but we've been right. We've been right about NAFTA. We've been right about China. And all these other elites try to explain it away and just say, no, keep listening to us. Even though we're getting it wrong, we're going to be right about this one. It's just not the case.
Here's a guy that was in the House and now is in the Senate, who's one of the leaders on standing up for workers. Listen to how Chuck Todd talks about Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio.
By the way, about the only positive response I've heard to this came from, like, Sherrod Brown. Right? Or a handful of like sort of old-school blue-collar Democrats.
No, that's right. I mean, and he's playing to that. He's playing to that.
Ha, 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 ha. Oh, that silly Sherrod Brown.
Yeah.
That was nice,
well,
wasn't it?
Yeah, that's, you know, people forget the heartland after the election. It's like, oh, what happened in Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania? Maybe we should pay attention to that. And then a day later, it's like, nah, forget it. Let's see what Trump is tweeting and dismiss the concerns of the heartland. But, and it's not just Sherrod Brown that thinks this is a good idea. It's actually most Republican voters, most Democratic voters. It's Senator Casey. It's Rosa DeLauro, Marcy Kaptur, Tim Ryan, Chuck Schumer thinks it's a good idea. I even heard former Governor Bill Richardson, Sly, said, yeah, there's a problem here. We got to do something about it. I'm with the president on this. And so it's fun and it's to mock or to marginalize, but the fact of the matter is, I think the American people support this. You'll never hear that reported on television or really on radio, other than your show, Sly. But it is this is one of those issues that really, really divides the elites from the rest of the country, and Paul Ryan is a really good example of that as well.
Well, it's interesting, the sort of job losses they're talking about from these tariffs, and I imagine you'll bat some of those down, but boy, they seem pretty minuscule in the sort of job losses we've paid because of the policies they have propagated, not only unfettered free trade agreements written for corporations by corporations, but they don't even enforce the rules. They don't even want to enforce the rules that are set forth that they already have in their advantage.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And here's the issue, and with the Republicans that are screaming about this against Trump, this is what killed me. They just passed a massive, you know, multi-trillion dollar tax cuts for companies who are now, you know, adding to their profit statements. Each company is lying in the billions upon billions of dollars. And here we have $9 billion in tariff, and somehow these are going to wreck the economy. Like, give me a break. And even, I'm sorry to get started on Paul Ryan, but I have to say this. You know, Paul Ryan last year proposed a 20% border tax that would have raised $1 trillion. And he did it with a straight face, and he defended it until the Koch brothers and the retailers talked him out of this. And now he's hysterical about a very targeted set of tariffs for steel and aluminum that would come off once we restore some balance to the market. And no one has called Paul Ryan out on that. It's like, come on, give me a break.
You know, there's a lot of talk about Harley Davidson, and that because Harley Davidson is in Wisconsin, didn't Ronald Reagan use tariffs to protect Harley Davidson at one time?
Yes, he did. and he did not hesitate to go to bat for Harley Davidson to help it get back on its feet when it was facing a lot of unfair trade practices. And so, yeah, I think the idea that that having tariffs is somehow against the Republican philosophy is really misguided. I'm embarrassed to say this, Sly, but Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon put more tariffs on products than any Democrat has since the end of World War II.
I'm aware. It's a blind spot. You know, I mean, even Ted Kennedy was sort of a free trader. Jimmy Carter was a free trader.
Right.
I, God bless Jimmy Carter. I love him, but he's got a blind spot on this issue.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And this is I think this is the part that's troubling to me, is that, you know, Clinton, Obama, Carter, those guys are like, well, you know, I can't show that I'm kind of with labor on this because the neoliberals will hate me, and I want to stay part of the club. And then you have folks who make very selective actions, but they do it very strategically. I mean, George Bush even put tariffs on steel.
They're saying that didn't work. Your response to that?
Couldn't be more wrong. But before the tariffs, which, by the way, Bill Clinton said he would not do, we lost more than 30 steel companies to bankruptcy. The industry was in free fall. It was very, very close to the brink of being inconsequential in the United States. And the tariffs were kind of like that country song, too much, too little, too late. I can't remember the rest of it, but they came in. He took them off too early because there was this backlash that occurred. But the economic effects, you can cite a study that's funded by importers that say they cost 200,000 jobs, or you can look what the official body, the International Trade Commission, said when it looked back at the tariffs, which said it helped the steel industry. In most cases, steel consumers didn't see any price increase. 71% of steel consumers didn't have any change to their contracts. Their profits went up the year after the tariffs were in effect, and U.S. prices for these commodities for steel rose more slowly than the global price. So that never gets reported because it doesn't fit in with the nice media narrative about how this is terrible, and just because Donald Trump is doing it means it must be really bad. Right. And, you know, I'm there. I oppose most Trump policies. But people have to remember on this, on trade, Trump was essentially saying the thing, as leaders like Leo Gerard and Sherrod Brown have been saying for many, many years.
All right. Stand by. We'll talk more with Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Firefighters Local 311, Madison Teamsters Local 695, and Madison Teachers Incorporated. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of moving parts to what's going on with this situation. Before I get to that, I want to ask you, and this seems logical to me, this is the argument I've been making with a lot of people. If China were to kill off, and other countries that are cheating, Vietnam, Russia, and so forth, if they were to kill off our steel industry, and it's true the market is sort of being subsidized right now by the cheap steel they're putting on, flooding the market with, aren't they just going to jack up the price when we don't have steel?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the challenges, is that once you get your competition out, do you lower your price?
This is what Walmart's been accused of, right? Predatory pricing, right?
Right. That's never been the case in the history of economics. And so what happens, and this is, and there's kind of a dual effect here, is that, you know, first, you establish there's so much overcapacity. I know this is a really boring topic, but it's central to why this is happening. I mean, there's way more steel mills in the world than there should be. And most of those excess steel mills are in China. And they churn out steel every day that is not needed or purchased or consumed. And anybody who knows the laws of supply and demand knows that that's going to drop the price below what the market should bear, where if you're only making the amount of steel you need to satisfy the market, you're going to have a different price, and it's going to be a slightly higher price. And what this does to firms that compete in the free market, and that's the United States and some others, is it puts them out of business because they can't sometimes even make the steel You know, and they have to sell it for less than their input costs in some cases because of this effect that China has had. So it's very predatory. And it's not only, and people have said, well, China doesn't import a lot directly in the United States in steel. And it's true. They're now our 11th largest importer. But that overproduction that China has, the effect of it has spilled over into other markets. It's why the prices are so low coming from Vietnam and coming from Korea and Japan and Europe and other importers in the United States.
Yeah, I'm guessing when Reuters wrote their piece saying that it's not China we should be afraid of, it should be Australia, I'm guessing they didn't call you.
He did not. There again, you know, in this frenzy where Trump is wrong about everything, it's easy to get caught up into it, and the facts kind of suffer sometimes. And I, you know, I'm not going to defend Trump's tweets. I'm not going to defend the way in which he announced this. But I will say for everybody that he telegraphed that he was going to do steel tariffs during the campaign, June 28th, 2016, in Manassas, Pennsylvania.
It's why he won the election, or he won the electoral vote.
He won the election. Yeah, yeah. And the idea that it's shocking that he would do this is absurd, or that he did it in a fit of rage is absurd. This was a process that was put into place by the Commerce Department, and it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and we're getting towards the end of it. And so he was going to have to decide at some point in time. And, I mean, the bigger story to me is that you have a guy like Gary Cohn, who was at Goldman Sachs, that was partially responsible along with other Wall Street firms for our last economic collapse, who's trying to bring in folks to persuade Trump that this is a bad idea. And he's doing it on behalf of importers, on behalf of foreign companies, and on behalf of a philosophy and Wall Street. But he's, you know, his behavior is really questionable.
You know what's amazing about all this? And put this in a little context, we're renegotiating NAFTA right now with Canada and Mexico. There were meetings in Montreal, in Mexico City, and the media hasn't covered it at all. Zero. Nothing. Nada. They've taken no interest in the economy, but suddenly tariffs is cataclysmic, and apocalyptic. It's bringing the world to an end.
That's right. The sky is... Well, people, it's a great headline. Trade war.
How many times do you think that's been said over the last week?
Just, I mean, if you look at like Google Trends or whatever, it's got to be off the charts because it's all I ever hear about. And I, you know, and here's the truth, and you know this, Sly. We've been in a trade war for a couple of decades now. And we have surrendered our manufacturing base, and it has cost us one-third of all manufacturing jobs. We've closed down tens of thousands of factories, and we're trying to claw our way back, but there's been a trade war on American factory workers for two decades, and it's claimed a lot of victims. And the idea that $9 billion in a $20 trillion economy is going to somehow inflame a trade war is totally absurd, but no one is really interested in the facts, unfortunately.
Here is Leo Gerard on CBC on Friday.
Well, look, I think that the president was given three options by the Secretary of Commerce, and most of us that represent workers and most of the major companies and their CEOs felt that what was then called option two would be the preferred option for all of us, which targeted a number of countries that cheat and that would exclude a number of countries. And I think the president chose the least complicated route. At least it looks less complicated on paper. But once he does that, it gives the Chinese the same penalties it gives the Canadians, which clearly is wrong.
All right. Where do you think things are right now? And do you think that Trump is playing some sort of chess because of NAFTA, as he said? Is there something else going on here?
Yeah, I think a little of it Sly is looking for an advantage in the NAFTA negotiations because, as all of us rightly point out, we gave away a lot in NAFTA, so we don't have a lot more to give, and negotiations are give and take. And so if he can, you know, say we're going to do this tariff and then take it off, then that's certainly a concession the United States can offer on this. And just 2 points about the steel in particular. I know this is something that Leo Gerard's very concerned about. It's true that we get a lot of our steel and aluminum from Canada and from Mexico as well. And I will say I'm not terribly concerned about those two countries. And I think ultimately they will be excluded from any sort of tariff if they are willing to renegotiate a NAFTA that's better for workers in all three countries. And also with respect to steel and aluminum, if they are committed to both fighting against unfair trade practices overseas, it's the United States that files all these dumping cases. Other countries don't file as many of them. They need to push back more against China and others as well, and they need to agree not to have Chinese steel come through Canada or
Here's another.
Get into the United States.
Here's another clip from Leo.
It's also very important that the Canadian government make sure that they understand and that the administration understands that Canada is not going to allow for transshipment or transformation. If there's a function of cheating by China in the U.S., they're not going to let that stuff come to Canada.
Yeah, one of the worries here, if people know you're a Canadian, although you work in the United States now, that one of the big concerns here is that if this goes through and Canada, even if it isn't exempt, that cheap steel might be dumped into this country with the Canadian jobs at stake there as well.
Look, at the fact of the matter is cheap steel is being dumped in Canada right now. And our union has worked with the current Canadian administration to tighten up Canada's trade laws so that unions can bring trade cases. And we've done that, and we've won a couple of cases. And we're going to do, and our union is going to promote and do more. But what we need to do is make sure that as part of the agreement that's going to happen, if it happens, is that Canada signs an agreement with the U.S. and with other countries that steel that's sanctioned by in China is not going to get transshipped to America.
Isn't it interesting? The host of the political show on CBC had no idea that Chinese steel was being dumped into Canada.
It's not surprising because, again, I think folks are just looking at the president and kind of the awkwardness with which he approached this issue and don't look at the substance. And, you know, most people don't think about steel markets all the time. I mean, I'm an exception to that because it's my job, but I think it is important for folks to get all the facts and that this is not something that's directed to try to tweak Justin Trudeau or the Mexicans or anybody else, that there is a serious market distortion here and that every country needs to play a role in restoring it. And so far, and this is the very frustrating thing, it's frustrating to Leo Gerard, it's frustrating to me, it's obviously frustrating to the president, is that all countries have been willing to do is talk. Let's have a dialogue. It took them almost a year to agree to define overcapacity, like what it even is. And so, you know, China, other countries, they'll slow walk this because the solutions, I'll admit, I mean, they're not, you know, they're not easy. They require a lot of adjustment, but it's long overdue. And I think that if there is also a silver lining to Trump's approach on this, is that it will jumpstart some action on overcapacity. He's basically forcing the question here.
How much do you think his reticence to single out countries has to do with Russia?
Look, I don't know. It's a good question. Russia is a challenge. Russia is a huge net importer of steel into the United States. The Russian steel companies are, let me be polite about this, sketchy in a lot of ways.
Really?
So if it would be absurd if Russia was excluded for any reason. I cannot imagine that happening. And if they are, I mean, Trump shows kind of what he's about And it would be really, really disruptive to the effort to try to restore some sanity to the steel market and to put steelworkers back to work in the United States.
I should have prefaced this entire conversation with, you're Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. You're not Scott Paul, the Alliance of Aluminum Manufacturers and Workers, or just steelworkers. You have an organization that defends American jobs and American companies. So you're speaking from the perspective of manufacturing in America, correct?
Yeah, I sure am. I absolutely am. And we're both, you know, from a policy perspective, we believe trade enforcement is just as important as trade expansion, and the two go hand in hand. And we're also obviously very concerned in particular about steel and about American steel and about our national security.
Yeah,
and
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but as far as national security, how does this affect national security?
It has a huge impact. I mean, steel and aluminum, if you think about our military, they're in almost everything. You know, they're in our tanks, they're in our aircraft carriers, they're in our airplanes. And the challenge lie is that we're down to just a handful of plants that can make this military-grade steel. A lot of them have been put out of business. And unlike other countries where the government might own a steel mill or an aluminum mill, we don't have that in the United States. And so these military contracts account for a small part of the portfolio for these steel mills. And so they depend on a functioning steel market in the United States, and they also depend on demand from other sectors like infrastructure, construction, what have you. So the economy matters a lot to them. Tariffs matter a lot to them. Unfair trade practices matter a lot. But I don't think that we want to depend on China or Russia for the armor plate for our personnel carriers or for the high quality aluminum that goes into some of our airplanes. That's just not something that makes sense from any sort of perspective.
Final question. It's a basic one for, I'm sure you've heard it 1,000 times over the last week, for people that say tariffs never work, your response?
Tariffs do work. You know, they've worked for a long time. It depends on how you deploy them. There are bad ways to deploy them. This isn't one of those. This is a very effective, targeted way to help the steel and aluminum industries. Alexander Hamilton built America's manufacturing economy on tariffs, and they've been deployed throughout history since then to help ensure that we either grow or stabilize our industry. And they go hand in hand, Sly, as I said, with trade expansion. We want to open markets overseas. We also want to ensure that our market is not exposed to unfair trade practices from abroad. And these tariffs will not harm the economy. I mean, people will have to figure out a different headline after trade wars. They'll be enormously helpful to the steel and the aluminum communities in the United States. And all these folks want to do is make steel for our military, for our skyscrapers, for our bridges, for our washing machines and our automobiles and our aircraft, and they just want a shot.
Well, and there's an entire supply chain of workers that contribute to their jobs as well. So it's a industry that doesn't just affect the actual steel and aluminum workers' jobs. It's a whole supply chain.
Yeah, that's exactly right. One steel job supports somewhere between 6 and 7, possibly more, other jobs in the community. They pay wages that are irreplaceable because of the skill sets that are required. You know, a steel worker can make $70,000 or $80,000 or more, and these are the engines that the communities are built around. And when the steel mill or the aluminum smelter goes away, you get more opioid problems, more self-harm, fewer public services. And it is a, you know, this is kind of the destruction and devastation that we've seen. You know, again, I don't see Pittsburgh in the 50s or Detroit in the 50s. There's a lot of reasons why we don't want to repeat it that way, but I do see a bright future for 21st century manufacturing if we believe in our workers, if we give them a chance.
Well, I just know Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario is my home away from home. When the steel plant there you know, get shaky. It's a big deal.
Yeah. It's a huge deal. It affects the restaurant. It affects the school. It affects, you know, how people are feeling. You know, it affects, you ask the ministers. It affects everything. And that's what gets lost in all of this. It's not some philosophical debate. It's about real lives and real people and giving them a brighter future.
Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. If you want to read some of these statistics, what's your website?
We're at AmericanManufacturing.org, and yes, we every day are busting the myths that are out there right. about this trade action, and we encourage folks to take a look and get engaged.
Scott, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Sly, thanks for the work that you do. Always a pleasure to share with you.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.